Turn things over to my co-moderator, Michelle Mahoney, and one of our first presenters, Melissa Friedland.
Great. Thank you so much, Jean, for the introduction to our webinar today. As Jean mentioned, we have a lot of great presenters that will be talking about regional water availability and Superfund, particularly at the Phoenix Goodyear Airport area site. I'm going to turn things over to Melissa Friedland, who is the Superfund Redevelopment Initiative Program Manager, and she's going to give us an introduction to today's webinar and move on to introducing the other speakers.
Thanks, Michelle. Thanks, Jean. Good afternoon and Happy New Year. Thank you for joining us. I'm very excited because this is our first webinar of 2016, and I'm very glad you could be here. The Superfund Redevelopment Initiative, or SRI, hosts these webinars as part of a quarterly webinar series about the reuse of Superfund sites. And these SRI webinars share site reuse success stories and reuse challenges in the hopes that these stories will inspire you to consider reuse on other blighted properties. Our webinars also provide guidance, tools, and lessons learned to support the appropriate reuse of Superfund sites. Today's webinar is unique. We're going to focus on one site-specific case study. As you may know, water availability and water conservation have become important topics, especially in the western United States, which has been impacted by extreme droughts in recent years. So coordination between site stakeholders at the Phoenix Goodyear Airport area Superfund site has allowed for a cleanup design that's enabled continued operation of businesses on site and resulted in the beneficial reuse of billions of gallons of treated groundwater annually. Next slide. So I'm going to start us off today with a very brief introduction to reuse and EPA Superfund Redevelopment Initiative, and I hope you'll see that SRI plays a key role in supporting reuse as a priority at EPA. Then we'll hear from Jared Vollmer from the EPA Region 9 Urban Waters and Watershed Offices about the importance of restoring, reusing, and recycling groundwater. After that, we'll jump into our in-depth look at the Phoenix Goodyear Airport Area Superfund site. So first, we'll hear from Catherine Brown from EPA Region 9, who will give us an introduction to the site, and then Mark Holmes from the City of Goodyear, Arizona, will share about the partnerships between the site's stakeholders, and Stephanie Caney of AMEC Foster Wheeler will talk about how Superfund cleanup and reuse of treated groundwater was coordinated at the site. And then to wrap up, I'll provide you with a few additional resources and points of contact, and we may have time to take some additional questions next time. So to start us off today, I'd like to share very briefly about reuse and the ways SRI can support site reuse. EPA's primary mission is to protect human health and the environment, and returning contaminated sites to productive use can contribute to these goals. So SRI works with communities and other partners in considering future use opportunities and integrating appropriate reuse options into the cleanup process. EPA has always been supportive of site reuse, but in recent years, reuse has become a priority and an integral part of the agency's strategic plans and goals. And what I really want to emphasize is that reuse considerations can and should be explored at any point during the Superfund cleanup process. There are many different ways to reuse Superfund sites, and there is no one-size-fits-all solution to determining which reuse type will be most appropriate or how to make sure that the site is best reused. And I also want to point out that many sites can support multiple types of reuse, such as the South Bay Asbestos Area site in San Jose, California, shown in the two photos here. The South Bay Asbestos Area site is home to two thriving business parks, which provide commercial space and office space for a wide range of businesses, as well as a 25-acre open space preserve, which provides walking trails and habitat for local wildlife. So this is just one of many excellent examples of site reuse, and I'd like to encourage you to visit the SRI website to find more in-depth information under the Reuse Success Stories section heading. And if you have any questions about reuse or SRI, please don't hesitate to contact me. So I'd like to hand things over now to our first presenter, Jared Vollmer from EPA Region 9, who will get us started on today's topic by explaining the importance of cleaning up and restoring contaminated groundwater. And before I go, I just want to say, please feel free to ask questions of our presenters. We'll try to answer questions after each section, but we may hold some questions to the end if we think future presenters will address them. We also will have some time at the end of presentations for remaining questions. Thank you. Jared?
Thank you, Melissa. Hi, my name is Jared Vollmer, and I'm with EPA Region 9 out of San Francisco office. I've been working with the state of Arizona for about 9 years. I'm in the Nonpoint Source group, which is a Clean Water Act-funded program, and we're technically called the Watershed Group. So we do a lot of watershed work with folks. With Nonpoint Source pollution, a lot of mining issues, ag issues, all across the state of Arizona. So I also manage the Urban Waters Program out of Region 9. It's a national program, and I'm going to take a bit of a tangent, I guess, from talking about groundwater. We don't really work with groundwater, and so I'm going to go off with I'm going to start off with our urban waters, and then I'm going to just briefly talk about the watershed approach in Arizona. So our urban waters program, the overarching goal is to reconnect communities to their surface water, and this is about being acting as one federal agency with other agencies, as well as providing a small amount of fund for on-the-ground projects. If you'd like to learn more, our website URL is posted right there. And I'm going to talk real quick about the two main pieces of our Urban Waters Program. So we have 19 locations across the country. In Region 9, it's the LA River Watershed. We found that the LA River Watershed really needed better coordination amongst federal agencies. The Army Corps of Engineers had a plan that was kind of stalled, the community really needed to revitalize the LA River. If you don't know about the LA River, it's basically what you see in a Terminator movie or Grease, where it's a concrete flood channel. And folks haven't been able to use it for years. They couldn't go down. It was illegal to go down in there. And what we've been able to do is encourage the Corps to adopt a plan that will help revitalize and reopen parts of the river for the community to use. And for the first time, the Corps of Engineers allowed kayakers to be in the river over the summer, which is a pretty big deal for folks in that area. We could do more locations, and I think this is maybe where the Arizona piece would come in. We could do more locations if we had additional federal partners to help EPA. So we're looking for Forest Service, Bureau of Rec, any other agency to kind of lead a federal charge in Arizona. The other piece that we have that we started a few years ago was the small grants program. And this was to emphasize work in disadvantaged communities across the nation. So every other year, we would announce that there was funding available. And we just finished accepting proposals this year. So you might have to wait a couple years for another round to come in order for you to apply. And we typically fund projects that allow for a group to go in and educate a community and allow them to be reconnected through education and outreach. You could do in-stream monitoring, kind of bringing everybody back into the fold of the river instead of turning your backs on the river. So this year, these are the areas that were eligible. I haven't seen all the proposals yet, but you can see that we have some large areas in Arizona. You have Flag and Prescott, Tucson, and the Phoenix area, and even in Sierra Vista. So it was a pretty good size for the urban areas in Arizona So hopefully we will see some proposals for Arizona. The other piece, the other portion of my job deals with a non-urban approach, where we work with partners across the state, and these are, this is a picture of the watersheds in Arizona on a large scale. These are eight-digit HUCs, hydrologic areas. And what we ended up doing is we have targeted these areas for a non-urban approach, and there's a little bit of a Superfund angle with where Superfund can't pay for things. We have been able to go in and work with the community in the watersheds to clean up maybe abandoned mines, some ag issues, for instance, down in the San Pedro or the Upper Santa Cruz. So we do a lot of outreach work as well in the non-urban areas. The other piece of Arizona is that 72% of it's federal land. So we really have to pull on our urban waters tools of working across federal agencies. So a lot of Forest Service land, a lot of BLM land, and there's also a lot of Arizona state land that we end up coordinating a lot with the state lands folks as well. So that was my quick little spiel. I'll hand it back over to the group. If you have any questions, feel free to give me a buzz. I'm always available to take your call. Thank you.
Okay, why don't we move on to Catherine Brown? Thank you, Jared.
Thanks, Melissa. So good morning or afternoon, depending on where you're, what time zone you're in. Thanks for joining us to discuss beneficial reuse of treated groundwater at the Phoenix Goodyear Airport Superfund site. My name is Catherine Brown. I'm in the Superfund program in Region 9, and I am the RPM for the site currently. I'll be providing an overview and history of the Superfund site. So perhaps the moderator, Jean, I don't seem to be able to advance this slide.
Sure. If you could just try to move that green arrow.
Yeah, not
working for you? Okay, we can move for you.
There we go. Okay.
Okay. All right, try now.
Got it. Okay, sorry. So the Phoenix Goodyear Airport Superfund site is located in Goodyear, Arizona, which is 17 miles roughly west of the city of Phoenix in south central Arizona, as you can see in the graph, the relative location within the state where the site is. This is in the West Salt River Valley in Arizona. The regional geology consists of a deep alluvial basin bounded by bedrock mountain ranges. The area is characterized as Sonoran desert with an arid subtropical desert climate, and it typically experiences only 7 to 10 inches of rainfall annually. Summer air temperatures average 105 Fahrenheit, but they can reach extremes of greater than 120 Fahrenheit. Humidity is very low, and the winters are mild here, and thus being warm and at times hot and always dry means water resources are of paramount importance to people in the area. While historically land use in this area had been open desert and agriculture, in recent years the cities have experienced significant growth. In 1980, for instance, the population of Goodyear was less than 3,000 people. By 2014, the city had grown to greater than 73,000 people and is expected to exceed 100,000 by 2020. Identifying a guaranteed water supply to sustain growth is a legal obligation for the cities in Arizona. The principal source of drinking water currently is groundwater. So, Jean, not sure. There seems to be a delay, maybe. Thanks for the help. So, in 1981, the Arizona Department of Health Services found that groundwater in the area of the Litchfield Airport, which later became known as the Phoenix Goodyear Airport, was polluted with volatile organic compounds, mostly TCE. In September 1983, EPA added the Phoenix-Goodyear Airport site to the National Priorities List. Superfund investigations subsequently determined that there were two principal sources of contamination, which are now known as Phoenix-Goodyear Airport North Area and Phoenix-Goodyear Airport South Area. Contamination at PGA North is attributed to the past disposal practices at the Unit Dynamics facility, known as UPI. From 1963 to 1993, UPI was under contract directly or indirectly to the federal government for the production, testing, and development of components for tactical and strategic weapon and defense systems. At PGA South, the source was determined to be from surface discharge of materials used in the maintenance and repair of aircraft, first at the Litchfield Park Naval Facility, now known as PGA, and then at the Goodyear Aerospace Company from 1948 through approximately 1987. So in the process, the Superfund process as it unfolded in 1989, we made the determination, the so-called record of decision for the site, and it's with that rod, the selection of pump and treat for chlorinated solvents as the groundwater remedy at both PGA North and South was made. In that rod, the water end-use alternatives were included to provide an implementable, effective, economical, and safe means of disposal for the extracted groundwater. Specifically called out as options were the following, as listed, agricultural. Actually, I think we should be back a slide, Jean. Thanks for the help. Agricultural or irrigation for crop production was allowed as an end use. Industrial uses, municipal uses such as drinking water supply and certain types of water rights fulfillment. Recreational uses were also allowed, such as creating lakes or irrigating public parks or golf courses. Injection for aquifer restoration was included, as well as surface discharge, that being to the Agua Fria or the Gila River, the watersheds in this area, as well as diversion downstream for other municipal uses. As the remedy was constructed, treated groundwater was at first injected back into the aquifer to provide plume containment. In the case of PGA South, the shallow and deep groundwater plumes have been contained for many years. And in the case of PGA North, where much more water is extracted as part of the remedy, the shallow subunit A aquifer is mostly contained, and in the deeper subunit C aquifer, we're reaching containment. So thus, with the use of extracted groundwater now being available for other beneficial uses, let's talk about some specifics about our beneficial reuse. Next slide. So for PGA South, again, the treated groundwater is now able to be used and distributed to the groundwater recreation complex. And in that case, in 2015, we were able to redistribute 81.5 million gallons with an average annual savings to the city of Goodyear of $200,000. In the case of PGA North, where, again, much more water is extracted, and some from wells with rights to water supply or irrigation, and in addition to the reinjecting that we do for plume containment, we have the following applications. There's a good City of Goodyear Community Park lawn and landscaping irrigation for 21 million gallons used in 2013 for a savings to the city of $75,000. The St. Thomas Aquinas Grade School heat exchanger for air conditioning used 197 million gallons run through that heat exchanger, and then it's reinjected back into the aquifer for a double benefit in that case. At the Palm Valley Golf Course, 140 million gallons were used in 2013 for a savings of $250,000 to the city. On site, there are agricultural plots irrigated with 52 million gallons used in 2013 for a savings between $94,000 and $250,000. And finally, the ongoing injection for plume control used the remainder of 967 million gallons in 2014. Next slide. And then I just have finally some photos of these various reuse projects. Here's the baseball field complex, which receives treated water from PGA South. Next slide. And then one of the treatment systems, one of the larger of our treatment systems is EA06, is used to irrigate the Goodyear Community Park. Next slide. Shows the heat exchanger periodically receiving treated groundwater for the nearby elementary school. And then finally, or next, is the Palm Valley Golf Course, where the treated water is used, flows into a lake, constructed lake on site, and then the water is taken from that for irrigating the turf at the golf course. And last slide. Finally, on-site irrigated plots where various types of grass is grown to produce hay, and that just shows just a brief picture of the activities at the site. So up next is Mark Holmes, the Water Resources Manager for the City of Goodyear, and he'll talk in more detail about the benefits to the City of Goodyear.
Okay, thanks, Catherine. We have a question for you. Let's see. Someone is asking, was there a concern? Can you click on that one? Thanks. Was there a concern about using treated water for agricultural irrigation? And did you need to get an approved risk assessment? And did you have public meetings and comments? So I guess the first question is, was there a concern using it for agricultural irrigation?
No, nothing. So this is all, the agricultural use is all on site, and it's private property. So the, and with the ROD allowing for the use for agricultural crop production, we didn't have any issue with that.
Okay, great. We got another question for you. Let's see. And so for which parts of this did you take public input?
For the writing of the ROD?
Yeah.
Yeah, standard Superfund public meetings, and comments were taken on the proposed plan and the ROD, actually.
Okay, and let's do one more, and then we'll move on, and we'll try to get the other questions at the end. Someone has asked, are PFCs present in the contaminant plume?
I'm not certain I understand what the PFCs.
Okay, I think chlorinated is polychlorinated. Yeah. Well, let's move on to another one. Why don't we go ahead at this point? We still have a few more questions, but let's move on to our next speaker, Mark Holmes, and then we'll come back to those. So, Catherine, don't go away. Thank you. Let's turn it over to Mark Holmes.
Thank you very much. I'm Mark Holmes, Water Resources Manager for the City of Goodyear, Arizona. I've been with the city now for more than 3 years, and I'm very pleased to say that one of the primary reasons I came to work for the City of Goodyear was due to its focus on innovation and its collaboration. So today I really wanted to focus on that aspect and talk about partnering components for success and what those key elements were for these various activities and projects. So the City of Goodyear believes and encourages collaboration and partnership opportunities, as I previously mentioned. The City Council has taken that one step further. They've developed the City Strategic Action Plan, which underscores these activities. And this strategic action plan is linked with the cities, with every city department strategic action plan. So every department really has this initiative for looking for innovation and partnership and collaboration opportunities. So the City of Goodyear really has gone beyond being a simple stakeholder in the Superfund activities of remediation to try and assist in development of collaborative opportunities that could benefit all parties. The partnership had many stakeholders, and that went beyond the United States Environmental Protection Agency and the principal responsible parties. It also included the Arizona Department of Water Resources. It included the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality. And in some instances, relating to the airport activities, included the City of Phoenix. So the partnership with the Arizona Department of Water Resources allowed the city to beneficially use remediated groundwater without having to replenish that groundwater supply through very specific exemptions and provisions, which required the department director's approval. And just so everybody knows that within the Phoenix Active Management Area, where Goodyear is located, for every gallon of groundwater that's pumped, a gallon must be replenished back into the aquifer. That is state law as part of the Groundwater Management Act of 1980. The work with the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality allowed for specific discharge permits and conveyance plans for excess remediated groundwater in instances where the city was not able to take the entire volume. So as we were receiving remediated groundwater, where do we put the excess when needed? The city and the principal responsible parties also developed long-term citywide access and water delivery agreements, which provided the principal responsible parties with virtually unlimited access to the city properties or easements and right-of-ways. So the first example is the city and Crane Co., which is the principal responsible party for the Phoenix Goodyear Airport and our Superfund site. We developed and executed an access agreement. This made all city lands, easements, and right-of-ways accessible for remediation activities. The universal access agreement increased efficiency in that an access agreement with the city would not be needed for every site and decreased the needs for obtaining leases with private property owners. This also decreased the permit times by demonstrating land accessibility. The agreement also ensured construction standardizations. It would conform to industry standards and best management practices. Therefore, the parties could clearly understand the engineering guidelines and standards and safety protocol to residents. Also, any project that provides the city free water would have all city permit fees waived. Crane Co. agreed to deliver up to 100,000 gallons per day of remediated groundwater to the city, or up to 200,000 gallons per day of remediated groundwater during peak water usage months to the city's largest community park free of charge, as you saw with the image that Catherine Brown has provided. This is a water commodity savings, as Catherine mentioned, of $75,000 per year to the city's general fund. Also, because the water is exempt from requirements of being replenished, there's an additional savings of $25,000 per year. Also, Crane Co. Trained city staff, parks folks in operating the water system for the water timing needs, and the system has been working successfully now for over 2 years. The city and Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company, which is the principal responsible party for the Phoenix Goodyear Airport South Superfund site, developed and executed an access agreement also. Again, this made all city lands and easements and right-of-ways accessible for remediation activities. This universal access agreement increased efficiency in that access agreement the city would not be needed for every site, and it decreased the dynamics of obtaining leases for private property owners. This also decreased the permit times, again, by demonstrating land accessibility, and the agreement also ensured construction standardization and would conform industry standards and best management practices. Therefore, the parties clearly understand engineering guidelines and standards and safety protocol to our residents. Also, for all activities that provide the city free water, again, all the city permit fees were waived, and sometimes they can be very substantial, depending on the size of the project. Goodyear Tire and Rubber Company agreed to deliver up to 720,000 gallons per day of remediated groundwater to the city's Cactus League Spring Training Facility, as Catherine mentioned, which is home to the Cleveland Indians and the Cincinnati Reds, and they'll be providing this water free of charge. The facility is a 105-acre water-intensive turf facility with 17 baseball fields. There is a current water commodity savings by this delivery of water of about $250,000 per year from the city's general fund. Also, because the water is exempt from the requirements of being replenished, there's an additional savings of $50,000 per year. There's also kind of a tertiary benefit. Because the city now was formerly delivering reclaimed water to this facility, it can now recharge that reclaimed water back in the groundwater aquifer, better managing our aquifer, and banking those credits for future use. That's providing a water resources financial gain to the city of $63,000 per year. Currently, the facility is using approximately 30% of the total water supplied, and the city will be putting the other 70% of the water for other beneficial uses within the city. So here are some images of the city's community park, which encompasses more than 20 acres in size and consists of very large water-intensive turf areas and other amenities you can see in the photographs above. Remedial groundwater has been supplied to the park now for more than 2 years, and the park is located within a private water company service area. So, again, this is a substantial cost savings to the city. Here are some images of the city's ballpark facility, again, which is 105 acres of mostly water-intensive turf that comprises 16 practice fields and one stadium ball field that can seat 10,000 fans. Remediated water is fed into the lake reservoir pictured in the upper left image, where water is siphoned from that lake for irrigating the various fields. The remediated groundwater has been supplied to the facility for just over a year now, and the turf managers have seen healthier turf using this water supply versus the city's reclaimed water, which has higher total dissolved solids. And just to recap, the total city benefits, remediated water going to the city community park is saving the city approximately $75,000 per year in water commodity charges. The remediated water provided to the ballpark facility is saving the city $250,000 per year. The combined replenishment exemption saves the city for both projects approximately $75,000 per year, and the additional reclaimed water that is banked underground is not and not generating new water and is generating new water resource savings and creating water a cumulative value of $63,000 per year. So really, in total, these projects are saving the city nearly $500,000 per year from the general fund. And with that, I would turn this over to Stephanie Caney.
Okay, and before we do that, Mark, thank you very much. I do have a question someone's written in. How did PGA South convey the treated water to the city, and was additional infrastructure and piping needed?
That's a great question. I didn't go into a little detail. So, yes, the answer is yes. It was in the partnership, Goodyear Tire and Rubber agreed to build the infrastructure from their north central treatment system and convey that remediated groundwater about a little over a mile along the west side of the Phoenix Goodyear Airport down to an interconnect with the city's infrastructure. The city then built infrastructure from that ballpark facility reservoir, and then we interconnected at a location known as the Bullard Irrigation Channel, which is an irrigation channel between two irrigation districts. It's also a wash that when we have rain events. But there was expansion of infrastructure, and then there's a switching mechanism that fills the lake, the reservoir, when needed. Obviously, more water is used and consumed in the summertime versus winter, but there was infrastructure. I believe the total that was spent by Goodyear Tire and Rubber was more than $1.3 million. The city, because we had a shorter run to that interconnection point, the city invested about approximately $350,000. So you can see there's a fairly quick return on investment for that.
Okay, that's great. And that actually is a very good segue into a question that someone asked, saying how would you, with not necessarily for you, but maybe all of you, how would you recommend beneficial reuse of treated groundwater to clean up sites if the ROD didn't explicitly state that have beneficial reuses in it? So I don't know if Catherine, you want to take a cut at that. I would just say that I know a lot of times we write the ROD, and then when we get into the design, we, you know, kind of fill in a lot of details, but it does seem like what we've been hearing from our panelists so far is that the this was a tremendous, tremendous cost savings, among other things. So I think it has part of the answer is that if you would factor in that you would do this this groundwater cleanup, you'd end up saving a tremendous amount of money. Catherine, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Yeah, I would say in our case, with the foresight to include these possible water end uses is pivotal for our ability to do all these projects and to make use of the water. I'm not an attorney, but I would imagine that having that as incorporated in our ROD was the foresight, you know, was that has allowed us to take these actions.
Great, thanks. And I guess I just wanted to backtrack. We had a question before on PFCs. So we were talking about perfluorinated compounds. And I guess, Catherine, the question was, were there PFCs in the water?
This is an emerging set of pollutants, which EPA's just begun, as far as I understand, looking for. And we've just begun looking for them in through the safe drinking water program. And so far, there's only been two wells that had showed detection. And those are not wells that we're using the water for any of these beneficial reuses.
Okay. Thanks. I got one more question, and then we don't want to forget Stephanie. But someone has asked about a citizens advisory board. Did you have one at the site?
We do have a citizens advisory group at the site, an active one for the past 10 plus years.
Great. Okay. And I guess before I let you go, somebody's just asked a question about 1,4-dioxane. Did you find 1,4-dioxane at the site?
We did not. We tested for that in early 2000.
Great. Thanks. Okay. Let's turn it over to Stephanie, last but not least. Stephanie?
Thank you very much. My name is Stephanie Caney, and I work for AMAC Foster Wheeler Environment and Infrastructure. I am the project manager for the Phoenix Goodyear Airport North Superfund site. I represent CRANCO, who's the primary responsible party, and I thank you for including me in this. So the first thing that actually both Mark and Catherine touched on really is the cooperation with agencies and stakeholders. This has been key to the success of all the projects that we've implemented over the last 5 years. It's an item that we're able to discuss openly. We will get ideas from outside businesses that will be coming in, and they take that to Mark, then we sit down and have a discussion regarding it, and then from there we're able to include the EPA and really determine if it's a feasible option for us. Mark also did too mention that in 2012, the City of Goodyear and CRANCO did enter into a global access agreement, and that really does allow us to get treatment systems in a faster-paced way, and really allows us to explore different ways to beneficially reuse the water within the city boundaries. We have 5 groundwater treatment systems associated with the PGA North Superfund site. And as I take you through these, note that as opportunities have presented themselves, we've been able to work through different ways to beneficially reuse the water. So not all of these systems started out this way, and we anticipate over the years that hopefully we'll have more opportunities to continue this. Big picture, all 5 of these groundwater treatment systems treat approximately 25 million gallons of water a week, and that equates to 1.3 billion gallons of water a year. So we do have to be very creative on different ways to use the water. The first groundwater treatment system that we're going to look at is the main treatment system. The main treatment system was actually first constructed in 1994, and had a treatment capacity of 150 gallons per minute. And to clean up the VOCs, we utilized air stripping techniques. And then over the years, we've expanded the groundwater treatment system. This last year, we did a pretty large expansion so that we could really look for the, look into the future and really find ways to optimize treatment and how the water then would be distributed to these various areas. So we now treat approximately 1,600 gallons per minute for VOCs. And this is actually the only treatment system that we do perchlorate treatment. And now we have 1,300 gallons per minute treatment capacity at the main treatment system. The main treatment system currently has 9 extraction wells feeding into it, and total we're pumping approximately 850 gallons per minute. The water is then taken into the main treatment system, and it'll either go through the air stripping technique, or it'll go through the LGAC treatment system or treatment technology. And then water that has perchlorate in it is then used or is then treated using the ion exchange technology. If you look down to the left, this is actually a view of the MTS, and we're looking at the effluent distribution system. You're going to see that it's located right under the blue sails. And in the background, you can see the phase one and phase two, the packed air stripping towers. And there's also an irrigation system, and then we have our LGAC treatment train also back there. So in 2009, all the buildings were actually demolished at the site, and so we were left with a big open area. And in working with, in coordination with the EPA and also the community advisory groups, you know, their main concern was what are we going to do for dust control in that area? And so one of the things that we started to look at was utilizing revegetation plots or grass plots to really help improve the visual appeal of the site and help with dust control. So after that, that was our, say, our first item, our first reuse that we put into place, and that has grown over time. We also do have a network of 7 injection wells that has grown over the years, and we are able to inject the treated water back directly into the aquifer. And then over the past year, we've also installed 2 infiltration galleries, and that enables us also, gives us another way to get rid of water, or not get rid of water, but to reuse water and get it back into the aquifer without putting it directly on top of the aquifer and changing groundwater flow paths. And if you'll see down to the left, there's a view of the infiltration gallery that was installed in the past year. Our next treatment system is the EA05 groundwater treatment system. We have 1 extraction well that feeds into this treatment system, and it has a treatment capacity of 450 to 500 gallons per minute, or that's what we're bringing in. The water is then conveyed through the LGAC system and is treated for VOCs. We do have a bag filters associated with each one of these. This helps remove small particles, and it'll allow us to, when you're injecting water back into the aquifer, if you have particles in the water, it can create or it can cause your injection wells to clog up faster. So we do have pre and post filters to ensure minimal downtime if those need to be cleaned. This is also located in an area near the Maricopa County Flood Control District, and so they will utilize the treated water to put onto the fields for dust control when they're doing any type of maintenance in the area, and they've also used it in the past when they have any construction activities going on in the area. Our next treatment system is the EA06 groundwater treatment system. We have two extraction wells that feed this treatment system, and combined we're extracting 625 gallons per minute. Those are also conveyed to LGAC vessels for VOC treatment. And this is the one that Mark had mentioned previously. This is located in the city park, and we did some things in order to make it more appealing to the city park, and that's why you'll see, let me go back, in this picture that those two vessels are a little bit below ground so that as people are in the park or as they're walking by, they can't see the vessels above the fence. The treated water is then discharged either back into the aquifer with five injection wells, and or it's used for irrigation to the Goodyear Community Park. And then the water is actually always continuously being conveyed through a closed loop heat exchanger at a church nearby to allow cooling water to be used as cooling water and reduce the heat and cooling costs of the church. And I'll touch on that in a little bit. So the first reuse is the Goodyear Community Park. This was when we went, first installed this system, we put a tank out there with the possibility of doing this. And then in 2012, when we did the Global Access Agreement, this came to fruition, and we put in the pump skid in order for them to utilize the water. This is something that we did work with EPA on, and we had to do different types of modeling to determine how much water needed to be going back into the injection wells in order to create a hydraulic barrier between the plume and city supply wells. And we came up with a number that was agreeable by looking at both the model, and it's something that we continue to monitor on a monthly basis to ensure that we are within our parameters. So we began construction of the irrigation system, and in 2013, the City of Goodyear used 21 million gallons of treated groundwater from PJ North to irrigate the park, and it sounds like they only utilized the system primarily from May through October, but it sounds like they may start using it all year long if they decide to reseed in other areas throughout the year. So hopefully their use continues to grow. The EA06 groundwater treatment system was, when it was first installed, it was only one extraction well, EA06, and we began to expand that system in 2010. When we began to expand it, we started talking to the church about using a part of their land in order to run a pipeline through there. During the discussions, they indicated that they were interested in putting in or using our water so that they could decrease their overall cooling costs. So we worked with both the church and also the EPA to get that approved, and that does provide them significant savings throughout the year, and also kind of allows us to it's an added benefit. So at this point, we're all of our water that we're treating is being beneficially reused. This, though, allows us to kind of up that number a little bit because that is another beneficial reuse that it is being used for, and it passes through that cooling system or the heat exchanger to cool that, and then it goes either to the injection wells and or over to the irrigation system. Our next site is the EA08 groundwater treatment system. This groundwater treatment system, or the extraction well, extracts anywhere from 325 to 360 gallons per minute. That is then treated for VOCs, and then the water is injected back into the aquifer through two injection wells. These injection wells were installed in 2000 and became operational in July of 2014. This allowed us to put a hydraulic barrier between the plume and the city, or actually a well field up to the northwest of our subunit ATCE plume. There are last but not least, our 33A groundwater treatment system. This well was actually a converted well that, I don't remember when it was converted, but this well was converted into an extraction well. It used to be an irrigation well, and it treats approximately 350 to 400 gallons per minute, and this water is treated for VOCs with LGAC. This water is either discharged to the RID canal, and then that water is taken down and used for irrigation, and or when Golden Buffalo purchased the Palm Valley Golf Course Lake years ago, they determined that we could continue to use the well, because they actually own the well, and from there, and then in exchange for that, we would provide them with water. So we provide them with water so that they can operate their on-site irrigation ponds, those fill up, and then they utilize that water to irrigate their 18-hole golf course. And if you look down on the left, the Palm Valley Golf Course, they fill their water or their ponds, and then as they need it, they utilize the water to irrigate the golf course. And that is how the PG&E North Superfund site beneficially reuses their clean groundwater.
Thank you, Stephanie. We have a couple of questions, and I'm not sure they're entirely for you, but why don't we start out, and Mark and Catherine, if you want to join in, please do. So the first question, I think you touched on this, but when did the beneficial reuses start for the entire project?
It's been an ongoing process. So the original, well, in 1994, the water was extracted at the MTF, and then that was beneficially put back into the aquifer via the injection wells. And then that project has continued to grow from there. So I would say that, you know, the water has always been beneficially reused. However, how it's been beneficially reused has evolved throughout the years.
Okay. And Stephanie, I think this one is specifically for you. Were there specific drinking water system specifications, such as material type or certification, that were required in the design and construction of the treatment system, given its reuse application? And if so, can you name one or two specifics?
We meet the city standards for any of the pipelines that we install. When it comes to meeting drinking water standards, we are removing actual, the contaminants from the groundwater. This is not being delivered to any drinking water sources. And so that's not something that fully applies to us.
Okay. I'm not sure who this question's for. Maybe Stephanie, maybe Catherine. What happens when the groundwater treatment objectives have been met? The agency says the cleanup is complete. You could turn off the system, but everybody's become reliant on this treated water.
Well, that's a question for the long run. At the site, I think we're going to be in operation cleaning up the shallow and the deep aquifer for quite some time still. But I imagine as we move forward, and as has happened at the site, as groundwater conditions change, we do make adjustments to our pumping and our injection.
Okay, and Catherine, I've got another one for you. I think this is best for you. Did you have any pushback or resistance from environmental activism groups? And if so, how did you handle that?
We actually have not had pushback for this for the beneficial reuse of treated water, other than you know, the fact that we do test the water prior to distribution for beneficial reuse. It is we do monitor to ensure that we've cleaned up the contamination, and as with any complex project, there have been times where we've had glitches with the system, but you know, you have to, that's why we test, to ensure that we're distributing treated water.
Okay, and I've got another question, Catherine. I think this one's for you, but maybe for Stephanie. Was the water used in the cooling system reused for other purposes, like irrigation, after passing through the cooling system?
Yes, that is correct.
Yes.
So first it goes through the cooling system, and then it'll either go directly into the injection wells and or it'll be used for the community park for irrigation purposes.
Okay. And someone has asked, is all of the 1.3 billion gallons of water treated each year reused? And if not, what amount isn't reused?
All of the water is reused. It is either injected back into the aquifer, or we use the infiltration galleries, the grass plots. It goes as irrigation for the community park. And or it's used also irrigation too for the Palm Valley Golf Course Lake. It's also used for irrigation purposes.
Okay, that's great. Why don't we move on to the last part of our presentation, which we're calling resources and contacts. I want to thank all our presenters today, because this site is such a fascinating example of site reuse, and it was great to hear how coordination between the site stakeholders and EPA can result in innovative solutions to regional issues. Now, throughout the history of Superfund redevelopment, we've found that sharing stories of successful reuse projects is one of the most effective tools for promoting reuse. And these stories highlight effective tools and resources and provide inspiration for those looking to reuse contaminated properties. And our presenters have done just this by sharing the successes at the Phoenix Goodyear Airport Area Superfund site with us today. So I want to thank our presenters. And I would like to wrap up our time by providing you with some resources, and then we'll close out with a survey, and we'll see if we have any more Q&A. So next page. Great. So SRI has a number of tools and resources available on our website to help you when you're considering any kind of reuse. You can take a look at reuse planning project examples and get more information about the reuse planning process. We have fact sheets that highlight successful reuse. We have technical reports, and if you're considering a certain type of reuse, I'd encourage you to check out our partnership page to see which organizations might be able to help. And the SRI website is included as a link in the additional resources on the right side of your Adobe Connect screen. In addition, SRI has a redevelopment coordinator in each region to support reuse at the site-specific level. So if you'd like more information about an existing reuse project, or you'd like to discuss exploring reuse opportunities for a site near you, feel free to reach out to your regional coordinator. Next slide. Great. And if you have any general questions about the material covered in the webinar, or you'd like more information about SRI, don't hesitate to contact me or Frank Avasato and visit the website on your screen. So I think what I'm going to do now is I'm going to ask Jean to switch the slide view to the survey screen, And I'd like you all to take a minute to fill that out. And we use your feedback when we consider future webinar topics, so feel free to let us know what topics you'd like to see, and please add your email address to the bottom left if you'd like to be on our notification list for future webinars. And while you guys do that, we'll just take a last group of questions here. So one is, are there any ethical concessions regarding groundwater-intensive uses in arid environments for things like non-native vegetation cultivation, cultivation of water-intensive crops, or aquifer skeleton degradation? I'm not sure. Maybe this is a question for Catherine.
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of it. Was the question looking for moral or ethical?
Yeah, I mean, I guess somebody's saying if you don't have a lot of water, is it right? Are there moral issues involved with using the treated water for things that are sort of water intensive? Maybe if I could put my spin on it. In other words, if you use the water for things like non-native vegetation cultivation or water-intensive crops, have people had those discussions? Is that has anybody raised?
Do you want me to take first stab at this, Catherine? This is Mark Holmes.
Yeah,
thanks, please.
Mark.
Sure. So that's a great question, actually, for Arizona. And just to let you know that in the city of Goodyear, what we strive to do is to have a community asset or parks where we can have our community, our residents, and others that can come as points of destination and enjoy these different amenities. And what we've tried to do is eliminate water-intensive outdoor water needs in the developments throughout the city, so we have a very, very low gallons per capita per day use. The other aspect is that the state of Arizona and within the Phoenix Active Management Area, and because we're in an active management area, it's the highest, most regulated groundwater within the entire state, meaning that even though it's remediated groundwater, it's still groundwater under state law, and that groundwater has to be used in the most efficient manner, and it has to meet requirements under state law and rule and code. So we have to report what the water is being beneficially used for. We report how much water we've received. And for turf facilities, we have to meet a number of very stringent guidelines. So as you saw in the images, if you recall, some of my images, it showed both you saw some water-intensive turf areas in the community park, but you also saw a lot of desert landscaping with that require either low or no water use. So just to let you know that in Arizona, especially in the Phoenix Active Management Area, there are very, very stringent requirements, and it's still groundwater, and we treat it as a precious resource, even though it's remediated groundwater.
Thanks, Mark. That's great. Does anybody want to add anything to that? Stephanie or Catherine? Okay. And now we have another question, which is somebody's asking, what were the TCE concentrations before and after treatment? I think that would be maybe Catherine or Stephanie?
Well, it varies. And for PGA South, I think our highest concentration currently is some in the vicinity of 80 parts per billion, whereas at PGA North, there were higher concentrations, and we still are experiencing high concentrations on site in the source area.
But those do go through treatment, and then after treatment is complete, they are non-detect. So everything being put back into the aquifer throughout the different beneficial reuse are all below the standard and are clean.
Okay,
of VOCs and perchlorate.
Okay, and we've got a question. Let's see, what is the LGAC budget for treating 1.3 billion gallons of water per year?
That's not public information, so I'm not able to discuss that.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Hey, I think we're good. I want to thank my panel for doing a terrific job, not only in the presentations, but at answering the questions. I really appreciate your engagement and your sharing with us. And I think now we can turn this, I'm going to turn it over to Michelle.
Okay, great. Thank you, Melissa, and all the presenters today. We had a lot, and also all the participants for your active participation and providing questions and comments throughout the webinar, and it just makes it more engaging for everyone. I do want to let everyone know that this webinar is part of the Superfund Redevelopment Initiative webinar series, and this is an ongoing series of topics relating to the reuse of Superfund sites. And you'll see on this webpage here that a link to the cluin.org SRI page, where it will take you to 28 archived webinars on this topic. So I encourage you, if you want to learn more about other sites and their reuse issues and opportunities, to visit that site, and you can view the archives at your leisure. And with that, I think I'm going to turn it over to Jean Ballant to close us out and talk about providing feedback and where to get more information.
Thank you so very much. I'm going to walk everybody through just a few final reminders here before we close out today's webinar. As noted, copies of all of the presentation materials, along with other resources, documents, and websites that were discussed during today's webinar, are currently available on the seminar links or resources page. You'll find that hyperlinked right off of the seminar homepage. We also have those included on the middle right of your screen under related URLs. Scroll all the way to the very bottom. You'll find one link that's called Seminar Resources, and that has everything, including the other links that are in the related URLs page and then copies of the presentation materials. If you happen to be one of the lucky ones who've replayed today's archive, those hyperlinks still work in the related URLs pod, so you're certainly welcome to open those up and download copies of the materials as needed. I will ask if you could take just a short moment and share your feedback for today's session. We do have copies or links to the seminar feedback form available through the seminar URL window that you see in the middle right. Please know we read each and every submission that gets sent in through that online feedback system, and we count on your comments to help us to continue to offer free online training through this webinar. So I will ask you to take just a moment and share your thoughts for today's webinar. If you participated in a group, each individual can actually fill out their own copy of the feedback form. This link is available from this point forward, so those of you watching the archive, you too can still share your feedback based off the recorded version. We often get requests for certificates for participation. We are testing out a certificate generation tool, but that's not fully available for all of our webinars. However, if you share feedback for today's event, there is a box that you can check on that form that will at least email a confirmation email to you that confirms you submitted feedback for the live event. Most of the time, if you save that email along with your registration email or copies of the materials, that's enough to document your participation so that you can earn credit for attending today's session. If you need additional help, though, verifying your participation, you can certainly reach out to me at ballant.jean@epa.gov. I'm more than happy to help you. I just wanted to remind everybody you can connect with us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter to find out about the latest CLUIN webinars as soon as they are available. As noted, today's session will be made available through a recorded archive, and you should get an email letting you know when this recording is available in approximately 1 to 2 weeks. I want to thank the nearly 130 individuals who joined us from all over the world, believe it or not, for today's live broadcast, as well as all of the organizers and presenters who took time out to share their stories today. Thank you so very much for joining us. This will be the formal conclusion for today's live broadcast.